A music teacher reaches for his hat and instead grasps his wife's head, attempting to lift her onto his own. A cheerful man believes it's 1945, though decades have passed. A woman wakes to find her body has become a stranger, no longer responding to her will. These aren't scenes from science fiction. They're real cases from the neurological wards where Oliver Sacks practiced medicine. What makes these stories so compelling isn't their strangeness, but what they reveal about the fragile architecture of human consciousness. Every day, our brains perform invisible miracles, recognizing faces, remembering yesterday, knowing where our limbs are without looking. We take these abilities for granted until they vanish. Through Sacks' compassionate lens, we discover that neurological disorders aren't just medical curiosities, they're windows into the fundamental mystery of how we become ourselves. Traditional medicine reduces patients to symptoms, but Sacks rejected this dehumanizing approach, insisting that understanding neurological disease requires understanding the whole person experiencing it. He drew inspiration from 19th-century neurologists and Alexander Luria, yet went further, recognizing that neurological disease never represents pure loss. The brain fights back, adapting and reorganizing in ways both ingenious and strange, transforming neurology from cataloging deficits into witnessing the human sport's refusal to surrender. Dr. P could describe a rose perfectly, its botanical structure, petal arrangement, yet had no idea what it was until he smelled it. Visual agnosia had severed the connection between seeing and knowing. He mistook parking meters for children and once tried to lift his wife's head onto his own, thinking it was his hat. A brain tumor had damaged his visual cortex, draining meaning from everything he saw. Yet Dr. P remained cheerful, unaware anything was wrong. His wife revealed his secret. He'd turned life into music, singing himself through daily tasks. If interrupted mid-song, he'd become lost, unable to recognize his own body. Jimmy faced different erasure. Trapped in 1945, this former submarine radio operator couldn't form new memories. Show him a photograph of the current president, he'd laugh at the obvious fake. Leave and return, he'd greet you as a stranger. Korsakov's syndrome had destroyed his ability to move forward in time. Then, something unexpected happened during a chapel service. Wholly absorbed in the Mass, Jimmy existed in perfect spiritual presence, no longer lost in time's fragments, but unified in devotional attention. Identity depends less on continuous memory than on moments of complete presence. Christina felt her body die while she was still alive. A rare reaction to antibiotics destroyed her proprioceptive nerves, the invisible sixth sense that tells us where our limbs are without looking. Overnight, she couldn't stand, walk, or hold a cup. Her body had become blind and deaf to itself. Her brain found a workaround. Her visual system strengthened to replace lost proprioception, allowing her to control her body by watching it constantly. She developed theatrical gestures and exaggerated expressions. What began as conscious compensation gradually became automatic, a new way of being embodied. Even stranger, after a stroke, one young man became convinced his left leg belonged to someone else. When asked where his real leg was, he grew pale. It's disappeared. It's gone. This condition, anosognosia, reveals how our sense of owning our bodies isn't automatic, but depends on specific brain functions. When these systems fail, the disruption is as profound as blindness, a fundamental break in our most basic sense of self. Madeline arrived at 60, congenitally blind with cerebral palsy, dismissing her hands as useless, godforsaken lumps of dough. Despite intact sensation, she couldn't recognize objects or make exploratory movements. Had lifelong overprotection prevented what infants learn in their first months? The breakthrough came through hunger. When nurses left food slightly out of reach, impatient Madeline finally reached for a bagel, her first deliberate manual act in 6 decades. Progress exploded. She began exploring everything, then requested clay and began sculpting, first simple objects, then human faces and figures. Within a year, she became the blind sculptress of St. Benedict's, creating expressive, life-size sculptures that revealed an artistic sensibility dormant for 60 years. Bhagawandi, a 19-year-old Indian girl, experienced vivid visions of her homeland as her brain tumor advanced. Unlike typical seizures, her visions presented ever-changing panoramas, landscapes, villages, homes from childhood. "I like these dreams. They take me back home," she said peacefully. The visions intensified until they occupied most of her waking hours. "I am dying. I am going home," she explained simply. 3 days later, she died. Or, perhaps, arrived home. Ray's body erupted in violent tics every few seconds, grimaces, jerks, sudden shouts. Tourette's syndrome had plagued him since age 4, costing him job after job. Yet, as a jazz drummer, his tics became brilliant improvisations. When medication finally controlled his symptoms, Ray faced an unexpected dilemma. Haldol made him employable but creatively flat. He split his life, medicated during work weeks, medication-free on weekends to be witty Ticky Ray. As he explained, "You normals have all feelings, all styles available all the time. We Touretters are forced into levity by our Tourettes and forced into gravity by Haldol." Natasha, 90 years old with neurosyphilis, felt livelier than she had in decades. She didn't want it cured. "I wasn't fully alive until the Wrigleys got me." When does a neurological condition become so integrated with personality that treating it would destroy the person's sense of self? Rebecca scored below 60 on IQ tests, couldn't read or calculate, and got lost in her neighborhood. Yet she possessed remarkable receptivity to poetic language and religious symbolism, understanding Orthodox Jewish liturgy with striking insight. Clinically, Sachs saw only deficits, a broken creature. But encountering her outside, gazing at spring foliage, he witnessed transformation. She made poetic observations evoking Ecclesiastes, revealing a composed inner world inaccessible to testing. When her grandmother died, Rebecca showed profound emotional depth. "It's winter inside, cold as death. She was part of me. Part of me died with her." Martin, classified as mentally retarded, knew all 202 Bach cantatas and which Sundays they should be sung on. Bach lived for him. The twins John and Michael instantly identified prime numbers up to 20 digits and calculated calendar dates for any year. They didn't calculate. They perceived numbers directly as sensuous forms in a vast mental landscape. Intelligence takes many forms beyond abstract reasoning. The concrete mind may access musical, numerical, poetic, and spiritual realms that abstract intellects miss. Neurological disorders reveal consciousness as a chorus of systems: recognition, memory, body awareness, perception. When one voice falls silent, others adapt. Dr. P lived entirely in music. Jimmy found wholeness in spiritual presence. Christina rebuilt her body through vision. Madeline discovered the world through her hands at 60. These aren't curiosities, they're lessons in resilience and the many ways of being fully alive. The brain's flexibility shows that identity persists even when foundations shift. These stories remind us: recognize the full humanity in every consciousness, however different. The next time you effortlessly recognize a face or reach for your coffee without looking, pause and wonder. These invisible miracles define your human experience. When you encounter someone whose brain works differently, remember they're not broken. They're navigating their own reality. Meet them there with curiosity and compassion.